You are listening to the 5th annual broadcast of the International Anarchist and Anti-Authoritarian Radio Network, live from Zurich.
Hello, everybody. Like you heard, you're listening to the 5th radio meeting live from Zurich. We're going to start with a presentation of the participating projects. We will have basically two slots on this 6-hour live show today. The first one is about repression, and the second one will be about ongoing struggles worldwide. So, like I said, we will present the particular contributions of every slot on the beginning of every slot, so you're gonna hear what you can expect, like I said, at the beginning of every slot. So now, as I said in the beginning, we're gonna start with an briefly introduction of the participating projects of this year's meeting.
Okay, this is A Radio Berlin, live here from Zurich. We are a really teeny tiny podcast from Berlin, Germany, reporting on anarchist struggles from Germany and the whole world.
Hello, this is Czarna Luknia from Ljubljana. We are happy to be here in Zurich for the 5th time in a row for the International Anti-Authoritarian and Anarchist Radio Gathering. So we've been part of the network since the beginning. And again, we have met comrades and spent some great days in Zurich speaking about radio, about anarchism, about the different ways we can undermine the domination of state and capital over our lives.
This is the Crime Think Collective. We are a network of an international network of anarchists and dreamers that publish essays, analysis, critical thought, books, posters, and podcasts. You can find our archive of over 100 different episodes of both The Hot Wire, which is an anarchist news show, and The Ex-Worker, which provides analysis, history, and critical thought from an anarchist perspective on a variety of different topics at crimethink.com/podcast.
Yeah, I'm from Komplica. This is a feminist prison radio from Zurich. We exist for now almost half a year, and this is the first time we are at this gathering. We are a multilingual collective. We make broadcasts in German, English, French, Arab, Spanish, Basque, and Italian, and sometimes also other languages. And our goal is to make a connection between people who are in prison or locked up in other institutions like psychiatry or asylum camps. And we also talk about actual repression cases and solidarity actions for the people. And we are really open for greetings from people who are outside, who want to say hello and give wishes to friends or family members who are locked up. Yes, and we are really happy to be here at this anarchist gathering.
Yeah, so it's about Involora Radio. We are based in Zurich, and we're doing a weekly information show. It's about repression, because this is a big part in our life, in our struggles. But we also presenting like anarchist, anti-authoritarian projects. We speak a lot about queer anarcho topics and make some analysis. So we talk a lot about different projects and so on. Yeah.
Okay, this is this was the short presentation of projects that are with us here in studio. During the course of this radio broadcast, we will also use material that was pre-produced by comradely radio projects from around the world. So at least we will hear some material from Dissident Island, from United Kingdom, and from Final Straw, USA. And I believe there are other radio projects that will be contribute to the today's broadcast in different ways. Another technical point is that this program is streamed first on Radio Lora, so the hosting radio in Zurich. It is streamed also by Radio Zones of Subversive Expression in Athens. Sadly, comrades were not able to join us this year in Zurich, but they are really helping a lot to spread the word by transmitting on their FM frequency in Athens and on and through their webpage. And then, of course, the sister network, Channel Zero Network, of which more words would be said later on. They are also transmitting the stream. And the last, I think, I believe I'm not mistaken, also Radio Student from Ljubljana is airing the broadcast on their live FM frequency.
Just a few more words about the Channel Zero Network. It is an English-based anarchist radio and podcast network that's run by radical media makers. Both A Radio Berlin and Crime Think are part of it, and there are currently over 20 different shows that participate in it. You can listen at channelzeronetwork.com.
Okay, maybe for the conclusion of this short introduction, maybe just an announcement what we will hear about, what will be the topics in today's broadcast.
So we're going to talk a lot about repression at the very beginning, because repression never stops. Then we're going to have a roundtable discussion about repression. And then we're going to hear ongoing struggles from the media caravan that's been traveling in Chile and Mapuche territory, Rojava, potentially the Hambi forest struggle, the state of emergency in the U.S. with Donald Trump declaring that he will have the military build the border wall, an audio report from London, an interview with somebody who's been participating in the Yellow Vest movement in Paris, an update from Manila, and music and announcements and other discussions.
Yeah.
Hola Peña, estáis escuchando a la quinta programa anual de la Red de las Radios Anarquistas y Antiautoritarias Internacionales en vivo desde Zurich, Suiza.
All right, so we know that anarchists in Russia have been under a lot of repression for the last year and a half, being targeted by the Russian state and being accused as terrorists and undergoing a lot of torture, repression, and pressure. We have an interview prepared by Final Straw Radio out of the United States interviewing an anarchist comrade from Russia about the situation there.
You're listening to the Final Straw Radio Show, broadcasting first out of Asheville, North Carolina, and up on the web at thefinalstrawradio.noblogs.org. I'm your host, William Goodenough.
And I'm Bursa Goodness.
You'll be hearing from Tanya. Tanya is a Russian-born anarchist who is doing support work for anarchists and anti-fascists in the Russian Federation who have been persecuted at the hands of the FSB, formerly the KGB, and accused of participation in a couple of conspiracies. So I'm speaking with someone about the recent February 2019 wave of repression and torture facing accused anarchists at the hands of Russian security forces. Would you please introduce yourself for the audience?
My name is Tanya, and I'm a part of the solidarity group of with people accused in the network case.
And can you talk about the network case and the FSB to give us context?
Yeah, this is the case that started in 2017, and now there are 10 people arrested, and most of them identify themselves as anarchists, some just like anti-fascists, and they are accused to be an organizers or participants of anarchist terrorist network called Network. This case is full of planted weapons and tortures from the side of the FSB, as during the arrest or kidnapping, I would say, and during the investigation period inside of the pretrial detention centers with the electric shock and, of course, psychological violence and threats, forcing of relatives to give false statements to the media. And the people are accused to preparing explosions during FIFA World Cup and Putin's elections. I would call them Putin's elections because there are no other alternative, I would say. And to destabilize the Russian society and start riots. So this is the accused in. And I would say that this was kind of a reaction of FSB or not kind of classical thing that they do before a big... the whole Russia events and before elections, every time there are kind of a prophylactic of terrorism, or they need to show that there is no terrorism or they prevent something. And that's why there should be some case opened up. And there were this several people in Penza and in St. Petersburg. They were probably somehow connected with each other or were friends of each other. And the FSB were following them and beforehand, and just some months before elections, they were arrested and the case started. And it's still going on. And to understand, people didn't do anything. It's only for some kind of preparing of something. And participants, those who are accused to be a participant, the punishment is from 5 to 10 years of imprisonment, and there are two people accused to be an organizers, and it's from 10 up to life sentence.
That's terrible. Most of the people who have been picked up in this latest round of arrests have made statements that they later walked back, statements when they were being held by the FSB, the what was formerly the KGB under the Soviet Union, and now that they've been released have claimed that those statements were coerced by the torture. Is that right?
Yeah, most of them, yes. Now, right now, 8 people are saying that everything was given under tortures. or like one person didn't tell anything from the very beginning. One person made a deal with investigators and he finally got his court just like a couple of weeks ago, and he got 3.5 years of imprisonment by being on the deal with investigators. And means that he also should cooperate with them and also give some evidences on the course of others. And one person has a special order, so he's committing the guilt because probably he was for several months in really torture prison conditions, and maybe he just broke up and so he don't see another choice. So he has a special order, but he don't need to be a witness in other courts. So that's how it looks like right now. Yeah, but the most of the people are talking about tortures openly and saying that everything what they said was said because of this.
So a few months back, a young man...
Mikhail Zhlobitsky.
Okay, Mikhail Zhlobitsky. Is that okay? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yes.
In October of 28, killed himself with an explosion in an FSB office or entryway. Can you talk about what sort of impact that had in Russia within the anarchist movement there and within the wider public?
I would say it scared a little bit in the very beginning. Not a little bit, it scared a bit because the network case is going on and like several people anyway are in trouble. And it's the first case of explosion for like this kind of action, direct action for many years and with injured people. For I don't know how many years. And now we all, of course, fear that then it will be like massive searches, interrogations, arrests, and so on. And they were not so massive, I would say. And of course, widely discussed, but I would not say that anyone really criticizing, because it's clear that in the current situation in Russia, also in Arkhangelsk, where, as I know, not such a strong anarchist movement and there is nothing to join, there could be a feeling that there's no other way to act. And this is only a really good sign of like that there is a total absence of any political freedom of expression, and that's why a person is going and making this act. Yeah, at the same time, of course, this now used against anarchists, and not only, because just a couple of days ago, one journalist was accused in justification of terrorism. She's completely not pro-anarchist or something, but she just wrote an analysis of why this happened, why the explosion was happening, and she's accusing government because she said, like, okay, it's just a sign for them that the person had no choice. And now she also has the criminal case against her. So, yeah, I would say there was no split or anything, and we were all amazed. But mostly, I think, of course, it's a fear because now it's broadly used by government and pro-government media to say, yeah, look, this anarchists, they are all terrorists and stuff like this.
So you say because there's so much political repression, people aren't really... there's no groups to join and people aren't really meeting so much in public. Does most anarchist discourse just exist in the Russian Federation online then?
A lot, I would say. I would say that after 2012, after the third elections of Putin, it was like a really big repressive wave. And so many things in general became more online. And yeah, I would say that many things that were organizations before became an online media project. But there are, of course, also people create new spaces. And it's a lot about, I don't know, culture and education. And they hold lectures. There's still some newspapers or magazines made, and also some part who are mostly oriented on some direct actions. But yeah, it's of course less and less because many people leave. Many people leave because of repressions. Many people stay in prison. And yeah, and of course the self-censorship is also here. Because you will think twice to go on the street, because till before 2012, it would be like I were doing like many actions without applying because I knew it's like some small fine and no problem. I can pay, not pay, whatever. But now the fine is 40 times, minimum 40 times higher. And there are much more often arrests of people for the days. And if you violate this law on public actions or rallies three times in a row in half a year, you can get like up to 3 years of imprisonment. Even if it's like without any violence or something, like if there were too many people, then you applied or something like this. And of course, it's super difficult to legalize an action if someone wants.
You mean like get a permit?
Yeah. Usually it's about negotiation, about place, but it's actually about permission, in fact. And it's nearly impossible to legalize, to get this permission. And so that's why it's less things on the street. But the anarchists are still there. I would say so.
In the U.S., we often hear about methods of the government here being perfected and then sent out abroad, such as technology of surveillance or repression in U.S. prisons. Many, including voices from Crime Think, have pointed to Russian repression of anti-fascists and anarchists as possibly setting a new mold for repression that could get picked up by other states, including here. Are there any lessons, like in terms of the creation of conspiracies or public framing of the positions of, like, the criminalization of taking a position by anarchists or anti-fascists that you've seen deployed that listeners abroad should pay attention to in terms of how their governments try to destroy antagonistic liberatory movements?
I would say the main lesson that we have now is that people should be prepared that this could happen, that tortures could happen, and that they should not be silent about it, because this silence doesn't bring any freedom and doesn't release you from tortures, and only like make a feeling of those who torture you that they can do whatever. And I would say, some years ago, we couldn't imagine this could happen. Some years ago, I don't know, 10 years ago, I felt, okay, we don't live in a free country, but somehow it's possible to find a way and do some things and so on and feel yourself more or less secure and or free, better free. But it's not anymore, and it could change in any place. And I don't know. It just needed to be prepared. And it's also about checking what's going on with the usual people, what's going on with people in prison who are not political, because I think that everybody are political prisoners, of course. And when we know the stories of so-called usual people who are repressed by government, we know what to be prepared, because, of course, first, what was going on in Russia was checked on some people with Islamic roots, and then on some homeless people and so on. And then slowly it went to the political activists. Mm. So this, I would say, what people should check up.
What has international solidarity looked like so far around the people accused in the network case? And have you seen any impacts from it?
First of all, of course, it gives a lot of, I don't know, energy and power to us who do the solidarity and to people in prison, because all the information about solidarity actions are shown to the people by lawyers. And at the same time, because we cannot really do a lot inside Russia, because as I explained, yeah, it's problematic to do actions and stuff like this. And at the same time, of course, it's a direct signal to the government that there is an attention. And I would say in the very beginning, when we started to spread the word about the case, tortures didn't stop. And it really scared, because we thought, wow, okay, now it's in the media everywhere, but nothing helps. And after the solidarity action started, then I think at some point it influenced it, and they understood that it's not so simple anymore for them. Mm. And of course, it's super important for us that the word spread it, and of course people helping to collect money, and they send postcards, and yeah, it just can bring some smile inside of the prison. That is super important too.
I think it's really very important for people's names to be heard. Can you name the people who are facing the repression currently in this case?
Okay, and right now in this case in St. Petersburg is Viktor Filenkov, Yuli Bayarshinov, and Igor Shishkin. Igor Shishkin is the one who had deal with investigation or investigators. And people in Penza is Mikhail Kulkov, Maxim Ivankin, Dmitry Pchelintsev, Vasily Kuksov, Arman Sagenbaev. Now I don't need to forget someone. Andrei Chernov and Ilya Shakursky. And every name and their biographies could be found on the group website. That is Repression, like repression, but with R-U. repression.com, and it's there in Russian, English, Polish, and German. Yeah, and there are all addresses where if people want to write postcard or something. I heard also the news that some postcards in English went to some of the prisons, so it seems like it's also possible to write not only in Russian.
That's great. Are there, do you, it's okay if you don't know, but do the people in the case, any of them read English?
Yeah, I don't know.
I guess someone can always like Google Translate into Russian, maybe something that they write and send it, and that's better than nothing, right?
Yeah, but it's a good idea, actually. I think as we thought that it's not possible that the letters went through, then we didn't ask them. But somebody wrote, and then so we found out. And I think, yeah, the task for the next week maybe to try to ask them somehow through the lawyers if they speak other languages, and then just mention it on the website. So, yeah, I will try to organize it.
Tanya, thank you very much for this conversation. Is there anything that we didn't mention that you would like to talk about?
Yes, there is just super current case right now. Going on, the person was kidnapped, I would say, at the 1st of February. His name is Azat Miftakhov, and it was also published at the crime scene about him. He's an anarchist, openly, and he was arrested the 1st of February in the morning until the evening of 2nd of February. No one could find him, no relatives, not lawyers, and the court and the police station and everyone were cheating and lying. And during this, he was tortured, mostly psychologically, but also with using a screw gun, and that they were saying like that if he will not do what the FSB wants, and then they will put this screw gun in his ass and stuff like this. But he didn't tell anything, and he was accused in preparing a bomb. And Monday he was brought to court, and the court said that there is not enough proofs to arrest him, and that they prolonged the arrest for 3 days till today, that investigators could prepare themselves better. And today he was so-called released from police station and directly arrested again by other police department of Moscow. And now he is probably accused in completely other case 1 year ago. So it's like a direct repression against him, because somehow FSB really don't like him or what he's doing. I don't really even know what he's doing. So this is the thing to follow, because today we were really happy when we got this message. He's released without the court, and then we didn't know where is he, and he had no phone. And then several hours he was found again in the police station. So and arrested again for next 2 days. So we will see what will happen next.
And you said this is Azat Miftakhov?
Yes, and during his arrest were arrested also 11 more people, and several of them were also tortured with electric shock to be forced to give some evidences against Azat. Yeah, and to give some interviews to the first channel that are completely propagandist channel. So, yeah, so there is this network case right now, and it's also this case of Azad that we are still don't know what is it exactly about or will be.
Yeah, I guess the Kramthink article says that he's accused of being a member of a radical organization, anarchist organization, Narodnaya Samoobarona. Yeah, people self-defense.
Yeah, yeah. But now this accusation is, I think it's still going on, but he was released, and now he's also accused in some attack on the party. It's like vandalism case, 1 year old. And they just try to find something to keep him arrested.
Well, up on the Kramthink site, kramthink.com, there's an article called Another Wave of Arrests and Torture Against Russian Anarchists. And it tells the story as well as how to PayPal funds for the legal defense, which is very helpful. Tanya, thanks so much for having this conversation. And I wish you solidarity.
Thank you. Thank you for your interest.
Ciao.
Ciao.
You can find out a lot more about the work that they're doing in English, Russian, Polish, and German at RUPRESSION.com or by visiting crimethink.com and finding the article on the front page, Another Wave of Arrests and Torture Against Russian Anarchists.
Sociedad, la verdadera rebeldía no es una cuestión de edad. Para mí la clave está en el salto de las palabras a los hechos, de las frases a los actos. Queda intacto aquello que criticas y además no lo combates. Rutinas que practicas las condenas en debates que tanto asco te dan los estates y luego se te cae la baba viendo sus productos en escaparates. La economía presiona como alicates, tu banco grita jaque mate, escápate. Bocazas oficiales ladran como Sabater, nos quieren hacer creer que hay algo que agradecer. Ciertamente lo mejor de esta mentira es destaparla. Sé que mi vida está en venta, pero intentaré robarla. Tuviste siempre la conciencia limpia de no usarla. Ni los porros ni la farla contaminan al que parla. Si todos ya sabemos que el poder corrompe al hombre, cuando salga un caso nuevo, ¿cómo quieres que me asombre? Lo que para mí no tiene nombre es que aún no hayamos dado lumbre a lo que nos explota por costumbre. A quienes en vez de individuos solo ven la muchedumbre, a quienes sacan oro con la ajena podredumbre. No hablo de contracumbres ni filosofías, que la autonomía se pelea día a día, a veces corazón caliente y otra sangre fría. Tú y tu gente, yo y la mía, por el fin de esta agonía. Escuché una frase y la hice mía. Muerte al Estado y viva la anarquía. Actitud es lo que más valoro, es lo que priorizo. Intentar rizar el rizo y no hacerlo por el oro. Me mentalizo y exploro. He descubierto un pasadito.
Ihr hört die Live-Sendung vom 5. Treffen anarchistischer und anti-autoritärer Radios. Live aus Zürich.
Yeah, hello. We are talking now about a really bad case of repression in Torino. On the Thursday of the 7th of February 2019, early in the morning, the police evicted the squat asilo that was occupied since 1995. And now we are talking with Stella, a person who lived in the asylum. Hello, Stella.
Hello, everyone. Can you hear me?
Yes. You tell us about the asylum, the squat? What was it as a house project?
Yeah, asilo, as you said, it was a squat. It was 24 years old. And, of course, in all this time, many people have occupied the space. It was in the center of a very particular neighborhood in Torino, a neighborhood that has changed a lot during the years, characterized by a very strong immigration. And it was recently in the prey of big interests, economical interests, to re-qualify the area. It was in the middle of a gentrification process. And of course, this was changing the neighborhood a lot, and it was determining the struggles as well that were in the squat. The struggle, for instance, against evictions of houses, and the a struggle for the squatting of popular houses for people who had no house, and certain attention on the immigration center that is in Turin as well. As in the neighborhood, there were very often police raids to try to catch immigrants without documents. So this was more or less what was going on in Asilo in the last years.
Okay, and can you tell us what happened at the day of the eviction?
The day of the eviction, we had like a sort of an alert the evening before. There were many police vans and police vehicles next to the police station, a number that was very extraordinary. Like we are talking about police, riot police that has come from all the north of Italy. So there were like at least 20 vans outside the local police station. So we, like every other squat in Turin, we were keeping our eyes open. So when the police came at 5 o'clock, it was 4:45 in the morning, we were ready to go on the roof, and we stayed on the roof for 30 hours for a day and a day and a night.
Apart that resistance on the roof of the house, were there also things outside happening? Were there solidarity in the city, or were you able to mobilize at least some people in the streets?
The solidarity has been very, very strong from the very first hours. Like as soon as we started calling and sending messages, people started to arrive, both under the squat that was under the squat, and and to another one that is next to Asilo, another house that is occupied by families, and there have been several demonstrations in the city during the day, small demonstrations that moved quickly and were followed by the police in some situations, so they moved. And after a big assembly at the radio, at the free radio that there is in Turin, Radio Blackout, after this big assembly, there has been another bigger demonstration with more than 300 people, and that was a more determined situation, and it was evening, so this protest blocked a few big streets, and even with garbage bins put on fire in the middle of the street. And that was the first signs of solidarity that we have had in these days that have been very, very different, but a lot.
Mm-hmm. And what was the reason of this attack of the state? What arguments do they use for doing such an action?
Well, the Asilo was threatened of eviction for many years, but also with this eviction has come a police operation They were looking for 8 comrades that have took part to this to the struggle against the immigration detention centers. So they were looking for these comrades as well, and they arrested 6 of them.
What happened to the other 2? They managed to go underground or whatever. What?
One has gone underground, and one was in this operation but didn't have an arrest. So she is in the operation, but the police didn't ask to apply prison for her.
Can you explain a little bit further what is happening to these 6 arrested comrades now in the next days, or what we can expect from that, if you have kind of idea about it?
Yeah, so they are charged with subversive association, and that is called 270, the article 270. And it is an article that has been tried to be applied many times in the last years in Italy against anarchist groups, but it hasn't often worked from the police point of view. The thing is that the detention before trial for this kind of article can be very long. So these comrades are now in the city prison in Valletta, but they are kept in isolation, so they cannot see any other inmate, and they cannot see themselves between themselves. And more than that, the police has closed. I don't know how it is said in English, the small window that is on the door, on the cell door, it is now closed, so they cannot see anyone passing on the outside or talk with anyone.
Well, this is...
And we expect that since this isolation has to be applied in certain circumstances, and the prison of the city here doesn't have this sort of sections, that they will be transferred in other prisons around Italy.
This sounds really, really hard, and there's now the question what people can do to support those people. Are there, for example, addresses of the people that we can write letters, or what kind of action and solidarity are nice to do?
Okay, so well, there is a website on which there are all the names and surnames, which I think is easier to copy than that if I say them now, and that the internet the website is called Macerie.
Can you
spell the M? Yeah, it's spelled M-A-C-E-R-E. Oh, no, sorry. Macerie. So it's M-A-C-E-R-I-E. And it's on an autistici platform. So there are all the... It's in Italian, but we are trying to translate... the things that are happening and appointments in other languages. So there will shortly be the appointments in English, in French, and in German as well. And there is on the website there is a number of the bank account to send money to. There has been a lot of support in this sense in the last days. And we have, of course, many appointments in the next days. We want to keep the attention very, very high on this situation. last week there has been a very big demo and more than 2,000 people have participated. And we know that the city and, well, very much of Italy is very eager to join in the things that will happen in the next weeks. So we have, for example, an appointment next Wednesday that is under the, it's a sort of city council, but of the neighborhood, because one of the local politicians of Lega Nord, I think you know this party, it is a very right-wing racist party and it is at the government in this moment, one of the council of Lega Nord, he said that the demonstrators that participated last Saturday to the demo needed to have a treatment like that of school Diaz. And school Diaz was, well, one of the most one of the darkest pages of Genova 2001. It was when the police entered the school where demonstrators were sleeping and tortured and beat them. So this is what the political climate here is now, and well, we want to go under the city council for this reason. And at the same time, this will be an occasion in all of Italy, because more than 10 cities, well, there is Milan, Genova, Rome, and many others, will do the same thing under the Lega the point. Yeah,
thank you a lot for your explanation. And we hope that the situation gets a bit better and you can, like, try to support the people who are affected by this repression as good as possible. And we hope that a lot of people show their solidarity for you.
If you have something to add at that point, which you feel like it's important to call out, you're welcome to add it.
I think this is all the solidarity we have received in the last 10 days. It is not only about Asilo and about these comrades. It is also about a lot of people that are really have had enough of the national situation. And I think we will continue to build on this with all these people, and that the struggle will go on, and that in the next weeks there will be some calls on an international level. So we would like to thank you for giving us the opportunity to talk on your radio, and well, if you want to keep your ears and eyes open, there will be some news in the next day.
Yeah, thanks. We wish you strength and goodbye.
Thank you. Goodbye.
hard, seven is the pillage. Armed to the teeth, feet creep to the village. I'm here to supply our greed, how it works. Enter the enterprise, alert to get the perks. Initiated, to be contaminated, to be continued, never anticipated. Land investigated, mitigated, and negated. Better endeavor before it's all gone, faded. When the weight of it done been sifted, distributed, so we all gotta lift it. Till then, children, feel the boulder. Summer's getting hotter, winter colder. It's high noon, guns crying for the holster. Only got him in the holster, so free. The high cost doom decrees, lots of feet. Getting lost in the future, no tops to wait to see. Who the boss at ministry, complacency, chasing me. All part free when I am C. Too many MCs, just out the easy. Top fix to top the CD. Easy as downloading from an MP3 file. Faster than fast food, configure empty barbelly like a balloon. Soup off the tune, the loom and high rotation. Free of innovation, just a limit to go with no imagination. Like one nation, still a damnation. Ignorance far from bliss, stagnation. Fuck one nation, we talking to all nation. Coming through with a true vibration. Penetrate the borderline without hesitation. Got the worst poor border, got squatting my creation. No time wasting.
Several of us have already reported on the situation of the Klinika squad in Prague, Czech Republic. Klinika was a former pulmonary clinic that stood empty for a couple of years until November 2014 when a group of people decided to squat the building. After negotiations with the officials from the city, Klinika was given to the squatters collective to use for a 1-year period. This contract ended in March 2016, but of course the Klinika collective didn't leave the space. They stayed and took care about a better atmosphere in the city. They organized lots of social and cultural events and ongoing projects. A lot of concerts, presentations and workshops took place there. There were also different language courses for migrants, or you could get new old clothes in a free shop. Other collectives also found a home in Klinika. There was a nursery, a radio group, catering group organized by homeless women, washing facilities for unsheltered people, and the Food Not Bombs group that use Klinika for their activities. The social center lived until January 2019. According to a member of the Klinika collective, it was a great success. It showed Czech society that it is possible to create social and autonomous space based on more progressive left-wing values and organized on a grassroots level. Unfortunately, this has now ended. After 4 years of struggle, the house was finally evicted. For the last 3 years, there have been ongoing lawsuits against members of the Klinika collective. Despite that, the Klinika collective managed to maintain the space. Amongst others, it was the migrants that made Klinika a symbol of left-wing politics in Czech Republic and illustrated that there are alternatives to the authoritarian system of the government. But now, the sad facts. After a court decision, the building was evicted on the 10th of January 2019. There were negotiations with the city beforehand to prolong the existence of Klinika, but the company that owns the building decided to evict. The bailiff and a private security contractor that employs lots of Nazis and fascists
then cleared the building and demolished its interior. There was some symbolic resistance when some people stayed on the roof in the freezing weather for over a week. Others organized a solar party in the neighboring park for the same time. But the struggle continues. The bailiff demands more than 1,600,000 tech crowns for his service. This equals roughly 62,000 euros. Following the demand, the government froze the private bank account of a member of the Clinica Collective, who initially helped legalize the building in 2015. To solve the financial problems, the Clinica Collective is calling for help. They published a statement on their website that reads:
In January 2019, Prague's only political squad, Clinica, was evicted by a private executor and a private security service. For 4 years, this autonomous social center had been a place for meetings of emancipatory social movements, neighbors, and independent culture. Clinica was one of the first centers of refugee help in the Czech Republic. And after this, it was attacked by neo-Nazis and became a target of permanent pressure from Czech right-wing politicians. The executor has claimed 1,600,000 Czech crowns, that's 62,000 euros, as the cost for the eviction. He blocked the personal bank account of one member of Clinica's collective, who had signed the contract that legalized Clinica for 1 year in 2015. As a consequence, her wage goes straight to the executor and she cannot use her bank account. We understand this as an attempt to exact the exemplary punishment of political activists. All this is happening in the context of the Czech Republic being discussed as an executor's mafia state, which has brought almost 10% of the population into insurmountable precarious life situations. The amount of 62,000 euros exceeds the financial possibilities of the Czech social movement, and this is why we are asking for financial solidarity or advice of who to turn to for help in paying these costs. We will fight the executor's claim at court, and in case we get the money back, we are ready to return them if requested. Nevertheless, now we are in the urgent need of paying the money, so that the member of the collective is free from the tough restrictions caused by the execution. Her personal property is now under threat of repossession too. For further information or to donate, visit clinica.451.cz/donate.
Concerning the building in Prague, there is no final decision made too. There are ongoing lawsuits, negotiations and more plans of squatting to open a new social center in the Czech capital. If you are interested in the project, have a look on clinica.451.cz/English, and we strongly encourage and kindly ask you to support the donation campaign.
No bastard ever came home from earning $8.25 an hour feeling proud. Minimum wage, just a fancy term for industrialized slavery. We're in a war with the privileged. Those aren't streets you're sitting on, they're battlefields. And it is our duty to fight the comfortable and the overfed. So go forth, you sons of bitches.
Iz bojišč razredne vojne poroča Črna luknja.
And I know how you were raised. All right, and I know how people fucking think out there, and fuck, it's gotta be that way. They gotta tell you that thou shalt not kill shit and all of that. But that's not the way the world works, Selby, because I'm out there every fucking day living it. People kill each other every day. And for what? For politics. For religion. And they're heroes. No. No, there's a lot of shit I can't do anymore, but killing's not one of them. And letting those fucking bastards out there go and rape somebody else isn't either.
I'm not a woman, I'm not a woman.
Once again, you are listening to the fifth annual broadcast of the International Anarchist and Anti-Authoritarian Radio Network live from Zurich. So far, we have heard from an anarchist talking about the repression in Russia. We've heard from struggles in Torino and also the Klinika evictions in Prague. We're in the Repression Never Stops segment, but don't worry, it will stop soon. Next, we're going to talk a little bit about some successes that people have had stateside, struggling against repression there. Many of you listening may be familiar with the J20 case against anarchists in the United States, and we'll give some background and an update on the final outcome of the charges. On January 20th, 2017, tens of thousands of people gathered in Washington, D.C. to ring in the reign of Donald Trump with protests and rebellion, shattering the spectacle of a peaceful transition of power. What could have been a day of resignation and defeat became a flashpoint of defiance and resistance. Aiming to help set a tone of joyous rebellion for the coming years, protesters engaged in street theater, blockades, and militant street actions. But with resistance comes repression. In addition to shooting pepper spray and concussion grenades indiscriminately at protesters from 10:30 a.m. until well after dark, D.C. police attacked the anti-fascist, anti-capitalist Black Bloc, kettling hundreds. Several dozen people valiantly charged the police line and escaped, but the majority were trapped as police slowly arrested and processed them. This was the largest unplanned mass arrest DC had witnessed in 15 years. Of the 234 people arrested, 230 were indicted on identical counts of felony rioting. Later in the spring of 2017, the state increased the charges, and approximately 200 people each ultimately faced 6 felonies of riot and 5 counts of property destruction, charged collectively under conspiracy liability, and 2 misdemeanors, engaging in a riot and conspiracy to riot, which provided the grounding for the 5 felony property destruction charges. Felony charges are the highest charge you can get in the U.S., and then there's misdemeanor charges, which are lesser charges. Usually you get fines or tickets, but you don't get imprisoned. Whereas with felonies, you'll face jail time. In this case, J20 defendants were facing between 65 and 80 years in prison, depending on the charges. Defendants could have reacted to these outrageous charges by taking plea deals or going it alone, but instead, in an astonishing display of solidarity, almost 200 people committed to fighting the charges together despite the extremely difficult circumstances. In an attempt to keep everyone out of jail, the defendants invested in collective legal strategies wherever possible and used solidarity and mutual support to keep each other safe, ultimately choosing to go to trial instead of accepting plea deals. The J20 case was one of the largest political conspiracy cases in the history of the United States. The state intended to stifle resistance in the Trump era, to criminalize political rebellion, establish dangerous new legal precedents for conspiracy convictions, and send the message that resistance would not be tolerated. The government hoped to expand its repressive powers by recasting holding meetings and marching as a group as evidence of criminal conspiracy. They claimed that being in the same place at the same time, dressed in similar clothing, added up to conspiracy, and that the defendants were aiding and abetting a riot by virtue of their mere presence. The idea was to hold people culpable for acts committed in proximity to them. The state cited defendants as co-conspirators on the grounds that they concealed their faces, wore black, moved as a unit, and chanted the same slogans. It cast the Black Bloc as a coherent ideology rather than simply a tactic. The prosecution aimed to synonymize Black Bloc with riot, implying that anyone wearing black near a block is participating in a riot. The charges against the J20 defendants were an experiment. If the state had successfully set new legal precedents with which to convict defendants of conspiracy, it would have impacted protest movements around the country. While the state gambled that they would be able to use collective liability to bring about collective punishment, the defendants staked everything on collective defense. In the end, the state overextended and lost. The state grouped the cases together and intended to send people to trial in six-person trial blocks. Despite everyone receiving the same blanket charges, the defendants were prioritized into different groups based on alleged conduct and affiliation. Group 1 and 2 contained the defendants who faced the greatest risk of spending time in jail, including alleged breakers and demo organizers. Groups 1 and 2 were comparatively smaller. Most defendants were in groups 3 and 4. Soon after the groupings were announced, the state started to offer plea deals to lower-stake defendants in groups 3 and 4. These pleas included a misdemeanor charge reduction and required an allocution, which is a statement of facts, but did not require the defendants to cooperate with the state against other defendants. However, almost no one took the plea deals, and 200 people practiced legal solidarity and continued on towards trial. The first trial was supposed to be high-risk Group 1 defendants. The state hoped that they would win the case against anarchists that they thought they had a stronger case against. To disrupt the state's strategy, lower-stake defendants demanded that the state try a block of them first, intending to disrupt the state's process and weaken their ability to prepare for trials against Group 1 defendants. The state lost at this trial, with all six defendants found not guilty on all charges. Soon after, the state dropped charges against 129 people in January 2018, a day before the one-year anniversary of J20. A second trial block went to trial in the summer of 2018, and during that trial, defendants and their lawyers discovered that the state was withholding evidence from the defense, which is a common yet illegal practice that is rarely discovered while trial is actually in place, but only discovered after trial has ended. The court sanctioned the state, and the state shortly thereafter dropped all remaining charges against all defendants. It is encouraging that people stuck together, that most people didn't plea, and that no one informed on anyone else, and that people were willing to risk trial, even when their best legal and personal option might have been to take a plea deal. Yet it should not be lost on us that this victory took place on a stage crafted by the state. Facing decades in cages, defendants engaged in the struggle because they had no other choice. And while the charges were mostly bully tactics aimed at trying to expand the definition of conspiracy and liability, the dangers of many decades in prison were very real. Many anarchists and comrades got involved in the struggle because they could see the broader implications if the state won. Fundamentally, this case was a matter of movement defense, and anarchists acted as such. This type of collective approach by political defendants is rare and worthy of both celebration and analysis. Early on in the struggle against these charges, defendants and supporters formed a defense committee and united in a great show of force. More than 130 defendants agreed to points of unity, refusing to cooperate against fellow co-defendants and committing to work together collectively to fight their charges. This collective effort extended beyond just the points of unity and included various forms of solidarity and mutual aid, such as sharing information with each other, developing and implementing legal strategies, working with the mainstream media and independent media to shape the political and legal narrative, and helping to amplify that narrative in an environment of scant and inaccurate media coverage. It took a lot of effort to pressure lawyers into doing what defendants wanted them to do. Defendants insisted that their lawyers work together and stood up to their lawyers by insisting that they would not participate in a legal strategy that benefited them at other defendants' expense. And it was defendant labor looking through the discovery, not lawyers, that uncovered that the prosecution was withholding video evidence and lying in court. There was ongoing campaigns to publicize the severity and seriousness of the case and to pressure the state to drop the charges. The defense committee organized multiple days of solidarity and calling campaigns to harass the lawyers trying the case for the state. The defense committee was also responsible for organizing food, transportation, and housing for defendants and supporters while in D.C. for court proceedings and raised thousands of dollars to pay for it all. There was even a working group focused on everyone's physical, mental, and emotional well-being. It cannot be stressed enough that the way anarchists beat these charges was by fighting with solidarity and mutual aid. For a more in-depth analysis of the J20 legal battle, visit crimethink.com and read the article titled "We've Got Your Back: The Story of the J20 Defense."
Allein machen sie dich ein.
Kurzreportagen zu Solidarität im Alltag.
Generally in Greece we perceive solidarity only as solidarity in action. But a month ago the cops had shut down one of our squads in the district of Zografou. It's a very central district of Athens. And as they usually do, the cops attack squads and in general self-organized spaces very, very early in the morning. So they find the squatters unprepared in this case. We have to notice here that the squatters of the very specific squad were not more than 10 people. So they have arrested many, many of our comrades. And what they usually do after every breakdown of a squad, they spread an anti-anarchist propaganda on the mainstream mass media. A few hours after the police attacked, we had very sharp reflexes. We gathered around 1,500 people rioting on the streets, fighting against the oppression, and we managed to reoccupy our space again. We don't know if this will last, but it's a small victory we had against the state. And that's the answer we will always give when they are taken what is already ours and they have stolen from us, which is freedom, free spaces, and the act of expressing ourselves freely. Okay, so the solidarity movement is alive and it will continue to be.
Des corps plantent une lune noire. Vaisseau pirate sorti des lampes de l'étoile noire. Croisement d'épée, tête de mort sur l'étendard. Le crépitement d'une mer en feu qui se répand sur les boulevards. Dynamite statues et ponts élevés à leur gloire. Arrachent sans trêve le nom des rues, de leurs bourreaux, de leurs colons, des assassins, de leurs armées, des inquisiteurs incantatoires. Sans lumière sous la lune noire, opérant elle une marée noire. S'approche en cercle et brûle les guets des citadelles des tours d'ivoire. Le vin du pain des affamés gonfle les rangs au chaos des rues comme firmament. Et la vengeance comme fermamente s'avance sanglante sous la lune noire. Réminiscence de triste mémoire. Le vaisseau fantôme armé des ombres s'avance des limbes de l'Occident carbonisé à l'excitant. En silence sous la lune noire,
hissé le pavillon noir.
Que résonnent les cris de Cusco,
hissé le pavillon noir.
Que résonnent les cris des esclaves,
hissé le pavillon noir.
Que résonnent les cris et les sanglots,
hissé le pavillon noir. Hissé le pavillon noir.
Que résonnent les cris des bûchers,
hissé le pavillon noir.
Que résonnent les cris de Gorée,
hissé le pavillon noir.
Qu'il soit vengeance puis liberté,
hissé le pavillon noir.
Toujours le même décor, cette lune noire. À l'horizon, cette terre et ces murailles qui s'éloignent. Sur la mer, un bateau qui s'évade, des armées qui s'écartent, des canons qui se rechargent. Mais la victoire a choisi son camp depuis longtemps. Ira vers la lune noire, détruisant les armées des tyrans, ne leur offrant qu'un répit illusoire. À peine le temps pour ces soldats de se souvenir des exactions perpétrées sur leurs semblables. À force de sentir et sans blâme, fallait bien qu'ils périssent dans les flammes. Soudain leur monde s'embrase et pas dans le calme. Soudain les ruines s'entassent, toujours pas de calme. La lune noire a depuis longtemps affiné sa focale, rempli ses cales et mis le feu aux poudres à temps. Prochaine escale, un monde meilleur, faut pas que ça traîne, la suite attend. En silence sous la lune noire,
hissé le pavillon noir.
Que résonnent les cris des sans-voix,
hissé le pavillon noir.
Que résonnent les cris des combattants,
hissé le pavillon noir.
Que résonnent les cris des dissidents,
hissé le pavillon noir. Hissé le pavillon noir.
Que résonnent les cris des condamnés,
hissé le pavillon noir.
Que résonnent les cris des damnés,
hissé le pavillon noir.
Qu'il soit vengeance puis liberté,
hissé le pavillon noir.
Un vaisseau glisse sur les flots noirs. Les uniformes de sa majesté sont illusoires. Les vagues se brisent sur la jetée.
rejetés au large seront les corps des sbires de l'anti-liberté. La piraterie est le symbole d'un monde uni, démocratie, antisexisme, antiracisme et pas de pays. Je suis l'héritière de marée ride. Pierre par pierre, on démontra les monuments et les prisons érigés par le patriarcat. La rage des femmes ne prend pas de ride. Quand les porcs ont tous les droits sur les trottoirs, notre vengeance sera glaciale et exutoire. Les milliers de viols, d'humiliations, de genoux au sol et d'injonctions seront unis sous la lune noire. Et dans un siècle, que nos enfants seront unis sous le drapeau noir. Ça fait quatre siècles que les amants de l'utopie inondent les ponts des navires de leur sang mêlé. En silence sous la lune noire.
Ici le pavillon noir.
Que résonnent les cris des pogroms.
Ici le pavillon noir.
Que résonnent les cris des indiens.
Ici le pavillon noir.
Que résonnent les cris du peuple rom.
Ici le pavillon noir. Ici le pavillon noir.
Que résonnent les cris des violets.
Ici le pavillon noir.
Que résonnent les cris des pendus.
Ici le pavillon noir.
Qu'ils soient vengeance puis liberté.
Ici le pavillon noir.